Michelle Amador, singer, songwriter, activist, and nonprofit administrator, and this is a Solidarity Session Dialogue, a six-part series where I speak with artists from Nevada County and California to discover the causes closest to their hearts and what we might all do to affect positive change and support continued democracy in our community. This session features, in speaking order after me, Marta Rocamora, Yasmin Badshamaya, Pancho Tomaselli, and Maggie McCaig. Solidarity sessions are made possible through funding from the Upstate Creative Corps and contributions to my Patreon or directly through my website, michelleamadormusic.com, where you'll also find links to the many resources mentioned in this podcast, as well as to the artists themselves. And now, the dialogue. So I'm just going to kick us off. In the past year, I was invited to participate in a cohort online. It's hosted by an organization called Western States Center, who does a lot of white supremacy monitoring in the Pacific Northwest, understanding what is happening and reporting that out. They also are very interested in supporting democracy, highlighting the importance of breaking isolation, of bringing people together, and of leveraging music as one pathway of bringing people together. So my take from those dialogues was that just by meeting with other artists and talking more deliberately about issues and how our role affects those, it shifted something in me. And my hope is that this shifts something for all of us, that we become a larger, broader, more active, intentional community. Not that we weren't before, but as a collective. That cohort developed a web page called Inclusive Practice, geared for musicians as a way of gathering all of the ideas on ways to be more intentional. If we can go around the table, I'd love to know your artistic practices and a cause that's really near and dear to your heart in this county. Also, something that you've witnessed an artist do or that you've participated in where you just feel like this really had an effect, big or small.
Okay, so I'm a visual artist mostly. I also sing, but my primary practice is visual arts. I work in video and I work in drawing and painting. And when I got here, I didn't even know what Grass Valley was. I was following some friends. And then when I ended up, the first Snowmageddon last, not this winter, but the winter before, caught me here. And I was really taken by the people around me, the way they supported and helped each other as a community through the snow. I was, you know, like so many immigrants that come here from Europe, I was living in my van thinking it was going to be a three-month holiday, and then the snow caught me, and somebody offered me an exchange of a home in exchange for taking care of him. He had a broken arm, broken toes, his shoulder, his back, and he was driving with one arm to go and get food to this friend of his that was stuck in the snow. And, you know, I had all these ideas about what the U.S. is, you know, medical treatment for people who don't have the means, you know, all this kind of stuff. And then I realized that maybe precisely because these things are not readily available to everybody, is why people actually get together and communicate with each other and build community. So that blew my mind. You know, I'm not used to people helping each other at random, which is sad, but it's true. This community is also very interesting because of all of its history, from, like, you know, the recent history, the 150 years, plus the previous as well, the Nissenan and all. I don't know very much about it. It blows me away every 5 minutes. It still is doing it. So since I got here, I volunteered for the Center for the Arts, for World Fest, for California Care Force as an interpreter, all sorts of things. I'm involved now with the Yuba Harm Reduction Collective. The thing that really pulls me as a, both creatively and in the volunteering sphere mostly, is this underground current that everybody in all parts of the world seems to be pushing away, that is actually the thing that is leading us into so many problems. Like when I landed in San Francisco, everybody's complaining, oh, San Francisco, you know, it's full of homeless drug addicts. It's like, well, there is a real issue with mental health, because if you fall through the cracks, there's nobody to get you back out, and you're just roaming random on the streets and without. And it's happening here. I've seen it doing distro with the Yuba Harm Reduction Collective. And it's not only about the US, it happens everywhere. So my interest goes into that, into this going into places that maybe we don't like to see, you know, below the surface, which is a here with all the mining, the literal comparison. Like I've been kind of asking people who work in local bars, because it seems that there is some connections, for example, in Grass Valley between the mayor's house and Lola Montes' house and the five, you know, all these secret passages where things were being hidden, like during prohibition. But these things exist, but here, when you arrive, you have this idea of everything is so pleasant and perfect. This is where my creative practice is moving, and where also socially I'm getting involved in a way, because one thing informs the other, but it's not like too... Like, I haven't been able really to offer my creative practice in an environment which is just for support. My practice at the moment is just me painting or exhibiting.
I really love what you were speaking to, actually, these different connections and the way that you're weaving your volunteer work. I, too, have done a bit of volunteer work with Yuba Harm Reduction Collective and look forward to more of that. A lot of my community work has been in non-profit or decentralized community organizing, which I'm getting more into. I'm a part of an emerging mutual aid collective in Nevada County, and the compass is there for collective cooperation within this county, and where we can center those who are most marginalized, as well as for us all to be able to help meet each other's needs and build community in solidarity beyond these systems which are not really taking care of us, because that's something that is getting clearer and clearer for various communities here. And I think the challenges with overdoses and such, there's a lot of struggle here, the housing crisis, the poverty levels, that's very real. And I look forward to really bringing out more of my artistic and creative focus into that, and really weaving more of that in, as far as being able to share just more of the collective community struggle here. I'm a poet and a visual artist, I'm a dancer, and I actually just received a grant from Upstate Creative Corps to develop a creative poetry program for LGBTQIA youth in Nevada County. Nice. And we're going to be developing a community public engagement piece, which is going to be an open mic led by the youth and for all of the community allies to be able to come and really be in relationship and listening sessions. I've also been working a bit with Daniela Fernandez and the Theatre for Change social justice group. Something that I've really been lit up by is being able to develop more of an intergenerational relationship with artists and with different parts of the community, especially community in need or community who is feeling marginalized, and start developing more spaces that's lacking here in many ways, even though there's a lot of artists and there's many people with intersecting marginalized identities here. But what is lacking is the spaces to really build that belonging and solidarity. I know that's something that we've talked about, being part of the Black and Brown Coalition, is how little space there is for Black and Brown people here. So social justice is something that's very deep to my heart, as well as collective liberation, and I'm looking forward to being in conversation around those causes, which ultimately is connected to every other cause that counts.
My interest, it's more of a real interest that benefits the artists. As a professional musician, 30 years playing, when you do independent work, I came to realize that we have no rights. We can be fired on command. They can mess with our pay. As a family man trying to raise my children in an honest way with art, it's been very complicated. Why? Because, not because I don't think there is help, because there is a lot of help, especially here being an arts district, one of, what, 16 art districts in the entire state. So there are resources. And like I said, and my interest involves us in the sense of, I don't want to call it a union, an artistic union, because of the name union, unfortunately, has been destroyed through politics. So people might get a bad reaction. They would say, we're starting a union to help us, you know, get paid better, to help, so we can have workers' rights. I don't want to go and give up on my 30-year career because I can't afford to pay the bills. Talent is God-given, you know? And we're very lucky and very privileged that we are talented. But talented gets abused, and I don't know, for some reason why we're at the bottom playing bars. We're at the bottom. We park in the back, we enter through the back door. We have sometimes to pay for our drinks or our food. And then we barely get paid, right? But why do we do it? Because we freaking love to do it, right? And that's when they get us. That's when they get us all, because we act on love. But now we have to organize ourselves as an artistic community, not only musicians, but visual artists, theater, poetry, everybody together, so we can become more powerful, so we can demand what we have rights. We don't have employee rights if you're independent. You have zero rights. Zero rights. My friend, huge band we were playing, he was a sax player, he had to pull out the tour because he had a kidney infection, he had to get his kidney removed. He had two kids. They fired him while he was at the hospital. And they got another guy. My other friends got COVID, they fired him. And that was against the law if you had rights. We all want to get paid better, you know?
Yeah.
When you get a plumber, you don't go, well, the gig is over there, 500 miles away, pays $50. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't do that stuff. You know, there's most of the times in a professional setting, you do deposit to secure your date when you get booked. That's our side,
mm-hmm.
the side that we like. We're like, hell yeah, we want this. The county provides, or the city provides, an extra bit of money to the clubs, and within that, then we can all raise the tap a little bit. You know what I'm saying? We're dealing with prices, gate prices, that haven't changed since the year 2000. Here's my point. I'm an artist. I'm a musician. I'm a DJ. I'm a writer. And I want to help the community. I want to help the indigenous community, the LGBTQ community. I want to be there, you know, for freedom. Can't fucking afford it.
I actually said that to a nonprofit leader. The date didn't work out, but even the conversation was odd to me that when I asked about the budget, they said, oh, well, it's a fundraiser for a certain cause, and so we don't have any budget for bands. And I said, well, look, I'll sacrifice myself, right? I'll do it for free, but I can't go to the musicians in my band who've lost 2 years of income and ask them to do something for free. Because guess
and
what? They're your only secondary cause here.
I hate saying no. It's like, hey, you guys gotta go play with these kids at the juvenile or the homeless. It's like, yes, I mean, I'm fine. I'm doing great. But then it's like, my kids need new shoes and there's a gig playing at the casino. We are the people, artists, we're here to shape to make the sheep uncomfortable,
mm-hmm.
right? That's our gift. But we have to be smart.
Mm.
We have to be
mm.
composed and collective and smart and have a lot of experience. Because what I want benefits everybody. Even people bringing bands in, they'll be like, oh my God, Nevada City and Grass Valley has this thing where we go there, we get paid more.
Well, and then on top of that, this is a sensible stepping stone for the cultural districts.
Right.
This is a sensible stepping stone.
Right. Talent here in these two cities to get this done.
There's also the Americans for the Arts study on economic impact. So there will be a lot of data to say it's not just money at the wind. There's a reason why you want music at your nonprofit gala.
But then we have to organize ourselves. That's the power we have as artists.
Mm-hmm. There's also an interesting thing that's happening, which is about a paradigm shift. It doesn't have to be adversarial. It has to be educational and realized.
There's a PRACT. You know about the PRACT that Schumer is trying to... It's got the right to... The PRO Act is like a law. They wanted to pass it so we independents can actually have rights. I was reading on it because there's a Reno Musicians Union, ASTRA, that goes all the way to Nevada County territory. Because Reno's full of casinos and people like me will go to Reno to play. So they unionize. If the law has not passed yet, I don't think we can unionize, but we should do this coalition. And just imagine this, the first time where clubs and musicians unite. Where like the clubs and the musicians unify, because the clubs say we want better music, and that's why we have to pay more money. If we get together and bring the real talent that is here hidden,
mm-hmm.
all we need is just a little respect and a little more help, so we can actually become artists and provide to our families. How many John Coltrane's, how many Bela Bartok's are that we will never know because they had to get a gig and leave everything behind? It has to end.
Have
a stamp, like the Zagat rating.
Yeah.
We support the Artist Coalition of Nevada City and Brass Band.
Mm-hmm.
We only serve A-plus music.
It's also making it sustainable for artists and creatives to be able to live and work here. It's just that. This area prides itself for being full of talented musicians.
I'm 71, you know, and I've been an artist my whole life, pretty much, somehow or another. You were describing basically the Canadian system in a way. I was actually a member of the American Federation of Musicians up there because it was more like a local thing, and dues were affordable, and they would go to bat for you. All the clubs were all union clubs, and it was great. Then you throw in the government. I mean, the government is a huge part of making something like this happen, and it needs to come to support things like this. There was also a really cool thing in Canada, SOCAN. It's another place to register your music and songs. You get paid to perform your own songs in these clubs, and if anybody else performs your songs, you get money for that too. You just have to report it quarterly or monthly. Things like Spotify just has to go down. It takes 30,000 streams to pay for one CD. Find the musicians you like, buy their recordings. It's very easy to do, and they will actually get money, which they need in order to continue to be.
That's what I was saying with my company at the end of the show. It's like, don't follow me on Instagram. Don't follow me on Facebook. Come to my show.
Some of the best advice I ever got was from Utah Phillips, who was this fabulous folk singer who lived in our community for many years. He was a member of the UU Church. He started Hospitality House with a couple of other people. And then I started Night of Giving, which is this annual benefit. So that's mixing, once again, music for a worthy cause, which has always been something I spent a lot of time doing, organizing those sorts of things, raising money with music and, you know, getting people to play for free. Short sets though, but making it a big party, and there's food and something to drink. Utah said to me one day, the early part of this century, says, well, Maggie, he says, you've got the art of music down, but now you need to do the business. And it was just that simple a thing of just going, okay, I just really need to think about what exactly that meant for me. And every individual, I think, has to figure it out. Mondays and Tuesdays, I put on my business hat. And then try to avoid that the rest of the week so I could be an artist and raise my kids, which has been my other big thing. I got up here with two children. I helped found the Uber River Charter School and Nevada City School of the Arts, and I taught in all these places. And did youth theater. To me, it was like the best education for kids. If it was done really well and intensively, you altered these children. And I worked, you know, in San Francisco for many years with Emily Cleon at San Francisco Day School. We do month-long programs with like 80 kids, and we take a great culture from around the world and get people from the culture. And this was all because her amazing skills of gathering money to do this, and the importance. I was just reading about how many of the world's movers and shakers had theater backgrounds as children, and the fact that we still have to struggle for money for the arts in the schools is kind of absolutely backwards.
It is. Not sports.
That's
music. Take the music out.
I mean, it's all in children that are going to, you know, like Gen Z learned what voting was about at the by-elections, you know, in 2022. They learned when they come out, and they make a huge difference. That's why I'm actually optimistic about a lot of things, because that generation are smart kids, and they are very well aware of what's going on in the world with climate change and such, and they learned that their voice, they can make a difference.
I mean, their survival literally depends on it. One loud theme is that the United States has a lot of problems, systemic problems, and priorities that are highly misplaced. We all understand that the power of art to create positive change is immeasurable, and also measurable because we have the data to convey it and to demonstrate it and to really develop these policy shifts on like a national level. We need to present the way that art affects social change, and the way that art is therapeutic, and the way that art unifies and builds bridges, to really show that the role of the artist is imperative in a functioning and healthy society, and also very necessary to create a better society.
We are in a time of a shift in values. And there is a question I have. There are a lot of ways to make that shift visible, to show solidarity. One is in your ideal version of this coalition, there's a visual way of signaling solidarity to the community. What ideas or what experiences come to mind where that visibility either affected you personally or could be used as a tool for other artists? Things you've witnessed either yourself or just attended something that helped you feel like you belonged or helped you feel part of a community that is part of this shift in values?
Well, in terms of environment, I once played a heavy metal show on a stage that was powered by 200 bicycle guys that were, you know, when they were pedaling, they were sending electricity.
That's amazing.
So,
yeah.
So it would be really fast, and then people would entirely drop out because they didn't want the music.
Yeah, that's so good.
200 bicycles. So I was like, this is the coolest thing ever. Zero carbon print, zero BS. It was just manpower on this bicycle.
Mm-hmm.
Guys with long hair and the Metallica t-shirt. You know, I would like to do it again. Yep.
For me, it's been, well, really kind of two situations. One of the shows that we did in San Francisco was the story of Sunjata, who was the real Lion King of Mali, 12th century king, basically brought Islam into the country. And we had these two amazing, very respected dancers. A few years later, I'm playing in Monterey. There's this amazing African band of mostly Malian people, and we're being introduced, and I said, we did this show about Sunjata, and they're just going, we know about that. And there was just suddenly this bridge. And then we did Hawaii, where we had to go to Hawaii to get Pele's permission. But then when I was in Hawaii the second time, I met these people, and they had these glass, fancy glass doors and these etchings, and I said, well, that's from the story of Pele. I did this children's program, and they said, video. We saw that. It turned out the video of that children's production had been shown on every single one of the islands. And the native Hawaiian people just thought it was the coolest thing. So that's when I just felt like, this is really good work that I'm doing with people that really cared and enough money to make it work. The people who were working there got paid really well. It always seems to get down to people need to know how to find them.
Which is often very much, there's a whole racial element to that because of the historical barriers of, you know, black and brown communities having that access, and there being a huge amount of just erasure and lack of access and struggle for those communities to even get. So access is such an important part when it comes to art, therapy, like workshops, education, the sharing of that.
There's so many layers around fundraising. I work in fundraising in the arts, so I feel I'm always right there with it. And there's an interesting article that a colleague shared with me about a political scientist who was living in Palo Alto, and the first week of school he got a letter asking for $2,000 for a foundation in Palo Alto that supports all the public schools. Well, he thought, this is a strong tax base. What does a foundation need $2,000 for when there should be enough from the taxes in this community to support us? So then he started looking into, where did philanthropy come from? And unfortunately, the answer is nowhere. You know, we talk about it as a goodwill beneficial thing, but really, at least in America, it was a tax code. And an interesting thing there too, which is, what is taking your money and not paying the taxes and doing what you want with it? That's you saying, I know the group agreed to something, but I want to do what I want to do, and I have the money to do it. And I don't fault anybody. We live in a strange time where I do hope that more people get directly behind with their money artists or causes or both at the same time. But it's a funny, there's so much swimming in all of the layers of philanthropy.
Which is a system very much rooted in colonialism and white supremacy because it's very white-centered. And that's just the reality, right? What I love about art and what we're all speaking to is the struggle of artists to survive, right? You know, some people who get to create art, it's very much a privilege. There's some people who create art because it's a way to live, because it's the only way for them to live, the only way for them to exist in this world. And there's a huge amount of power in that. But there's also, like you were saying earlier, so many...
But I'm tired.
Exactly, because I'm tired, and because we're all living under this oppressive system of late-stage capitalism where none of us are thriving. And like you named earlier, there's so many artists whose talent is never ever tended to and never ever allowed to blossom because they exist in poverty. And as far as what we all want, which is more like resources and just living for everyone, art has so much power and has historically created so much cultural shift to make everyone's life better. And just coming back to your question, I really love my dear friend Nikila, Mama Wisdom, and she's an incredible multidisciplinary artist, an incredible singer, musician, but also a mural artist. And she created, in collaboration with the Nisenan tribe, the piece of art in Grass Valley, the mural, focused on one particular tribal person, and the story is of the power of their song.
Mm.
And for me, I love that within visual art, there is this representation, cultural preservation, celebration of identity, and also the naming and the action of being a counter-narrative, because the Nisenan is so historically erased. And to now have this beautiful mural that is in our neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
that is so unifying and has so much story and creates so much belonging, and also is in collaboration and with full consent of the Nisenan people, that's just something that's really stays with me. And I know that Nevada City is working on the arts ordinance,
mm-hmm.
to
yeah.
create more murals, because the data, which we have a lot of, says murals in our neighborhoods and in communities, it's therapeutic. It creates a sense of belonging. It's nourishing. And, you know, it transforms public spaces.
Still, this horrible underlying, as you were mentioning, Marta, about this, which is very, very strong still in this community and comes out in very ugly ways at times. I'm trying to be positive that that is shifting in our own community, but, you know, there's this group that... They were, you know, they were working very hard during the last election to get some people on the school board that were...
To do the DeSantis school board shift,
exactly,
essentially.
Exactly, exactly. So that's been part of my thing lately, is to try to keep that. You know, there was a time when this, there was still, they wouldn't even admit there was any racial bias at all. I had a friend, it's so sad if it had happened today. She's a wonderful black woman who lives up on the ridge, cellist. This white man, her neighbor, was this horrible confrontation, and he was the perpetrator, and they believed his story. And so started this ongoing thing where I was deep into organizing and helping her, and it never worked because the prejudice and the racism was still so deep in there, and I think it's still there.
It definitely is, but I will give this positive element, which is there was a change in leadership of Nevada City Police.
Right.
The police chief, the county supervisors, the school superintendents, the hospitals, the arts council, and several community organizations are part of something called the Equity and Inclusion Alliance,
okay.
which really just came after George Floyd and people saying, what's happening in the community and how are we responding or not responding? It's been interesting to be part of that alliance, to really see at times, which we've talked about openly, a cultural disconnect between people who are habitual in administration. So this is how we do things. We meet in this building where everything is rectangular and things have an agenda, and it's not conversational, and people and in distance, right? So problems are over there and we're going to work academically, which isn't wrong. Policy matters, right? But this is how we're going to address problems, versus somebody literally walking in the door and saying, my family has no home, what are we going to do? Witnessing that challenge in real time, the positive result was a recent survey that was not by any means any kind of deep scientific survey. It's called Safe and United Nevada County. It assessed whether people have experienced hate crimes or hate incidences. And the results from that survey revealed that there are things people are experiencing, but they don't feel comfortable sharing those things,
mm-hmm.
because a history of no action being taken,
yeah,
or no services to be turned to once you do, and no support for you to take action or others to take action. So the thing that's springing from that survey is centralized data towards action. And I think there will be something happening from that, which is good. It's transparency, it's cross-county services transparency. So anyways, it's just to share that,
that sounds,
it is hard, and it does feel hard every time you hear that somebody has moved to Sacramento, because...
Right. I know several Black community members who have left because,
yeah, because
of the continual racism and feeling of being unsafe here on a pretty extreme and heavy level.
I moved from Latin America. I was like, oh, there's no racism in the United States compared to where I come from. I was like, oh, they figure out Martin Luther King, you know, I mean, they figure out the civil rights movement, you know, I have a dream. I'm like, oh, they got it. Ooh. So I moved here, and for the first couple of years, it was weird. You know, I was like out of place, you know, from a different culture, and then hit. And you know how it hit when I started playing in a primarily Black band. Every time we would do Black festivals, the Black musicians would hate it. And say, oh, look at all those critters, like that. And I was like, what's going on, bro? Like, it's like, this is cool. It's like, so they like, I'm like, there's racism within
my
race.
Capitalism had affected.
Yes, like,
racism.
We made it, we're out of the ghetto. Oh, look at this.
Wow.
And I was like, I can't believe it. And it started to hit.
Supremacy, basically.
Yes.
Yeah. And never to forget that as women, you know, I don't know a woman who feels comfortable walking down a street, because I've been attacked a few times in my life. And you know, you kind of got your key in there. Guys don't generally have that in their psyche. And then of course, as a musician for years, just fighting that sexism.
There's always going to be people with whom we will agree and we will disagree. Like there's something that, you know, there are extremes, because you know, some of the events that you're talking about are not admissible. Violence being
right.
inflicted on people, etc. But because it's making me think about, I know about these stories from my community as well. But then there's another
mm-hmm.
place where everybody. But when you go in there, you find that 80% of the clientele is from out of the country, because it's the cheapest beer that is
exactly.
available.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, this guy that is meant to be racist is serving Mexicans, Europeans, all
right.
colors, everybody that's coming in for cheap beer. So that's a kind of a paradox of it all.
Right.
Also, here in the US, there are many things that are linked to extreme right wing,
mm-hmm.
that in
mm-hmm.
Europe, there's extreme left wing.
Mm-hmm.
For example,
right.
this thing about being anti-global warming.
Venezuela, where I come from, it was just like that.
Exactly
extra
the same.
Left.
So,
extra left.
And there is so much identification with certain causes that is essential and important for us. But there are things that I struggle with that have to do with, for example, I have a neighbor. I'm white. So if I don't open my mouth, I pass.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But as soon as I open my mouth, they start going funny. And you can see in their faces that they cannot compute what is
going
on. Yeah? And so, you know. So this is a reality. As I experience this country, I'm observing the constant paradoxes of these things. And for me, as an artist, my duty is to continue to exercise constantly, staying open, because
mm-hmm.
I want to reach the MAGA neighbor
yes, yes,
as much
yep, yep.
as I want to reach that
that's
person
right.
that feels isolated in
I'm
this community.
That's right.
And it's very difficult for me to do it, because of course if somebody is being nice to me and all of a sudden switches to being all like, I'm going to have my, it's going to
yeah.
stir my own stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Or the other way around, I can be talking with any of you and then at some point we're going to reach a point where we're going to see differently.
Mm-hmm.
How do you deal with this? It comes from, I had the same conflict, you know, it's very interesting what you said. You got the art side of it sussed out. Now what about the economic side? I've struggled all my life with this because, for example, I cannot spend 6 months of my life learning how to fill out a form in order to get money. At the same time, I'm here and I'm grateful because you are offering an opportunity, because you got funding to pass this funding on to somebody like me, who is obviously in need of funding because I'm an immigrant of a different color, of the pretty color that everybody approves of. But I'm still here, and I came here for the same reasons that a Venezuelan, somebody from the Bay Area, or somebody from like that came on a barge from Cuba because I was looking for something better for my life, because I couldn't take anymore being pushed down constantly. There is so much of these things that really make me bubble that I feel that I need to go deeper and deeper and deeper, because there is a point somewhere where all of us do have a union point. Because I don't want to be the enemy of, I don't even know the face of this guy. How come I know that this guy is an asshole? I don't even know his face. Is it helping the community? How do I get to this guy so that we realize that we are not on the opposite side? There is a basis of very, very deep unhappiness that these people are bursting out and expressing in the world. And it is real. The unhappiness is real. And we can relate to that. I can relate to that.
When it becomes your identity, then there is a direct relationship to a breakdown in democracy. So it is actually imperative that as we do this work or any work, we are hopefully pulling people closer and together.
And we know we can come together in catastrophes and things like that to
right.
help each other. Where's the thing that, I mean, we know music can do that. I mean, how many times have you been playing for people that you know are not necessarily aligned with you, but they're moved. They're moved.
Well, it's all,
that's
art.
What I
it's
was
all
gonna
art.
Say.
It's
true
yeah.
art.
It's all art.
That's why unifying is so important, because we would show to how many nationalities are in this table alone. So my point is, like, in our world, in especially at least in my world, right, my little community music world that I'm discovering in Nevada City, I don't see any racism issues between the players. I don't see any competition. Oh, you're gonna take my gig, or I don't see any of that. Everybody's like, yo, you're new, come here, sit in. I wanna use that energy.
Oh, this is very
you
nice.
Know.
This is very interesting.
So that's dialogue one. If you like what you heard, wanna hear more, please hit subscribe, and please forward this to a friend. And if you like this song, I wrote it. It's called We Can Work It Out, and it's on my website, MichelleAmadorMusic.com.
You know, we can work it out.